9/11, seizing the fundamentalist moment. For months after the surprise attacks of September 11th, the public's initial panic, enemy, and fear lingered. Sleeplessness and stress faded, but even a year later, 50% of U.S. adults surveyed by CBS News felt somewhat uneasy or under danger from terrorist attacks, and 62% said they still thought about September 11th. As national attention turned to the probability of a preemptive U.S. attack on Saddam Hussein's Iraq, a few pundits and scholars began to raise a new concern. Had the public's apprehension and anxiety been molded into a new politics of good versus evil? If you're not with us, you're against us, rigidity. A crisis-forged, red, white, and blue ideology of religion, patriotism, and respect for authority. Let me call some expert witnesses. Over several years, I've built a framework of explanation derived from the work of respected experts and authors. Martin E. Marty and R. Scott Appleby, editors of the Multi-Scholar Fundamentalism Project. Charles Kimball, professor of religion at Wake Forest University and author of When Religion Becomes Evil, Five Warning Signs, 2002. Bruce Lincoln, professor of religion at the University of Chicago and author of Holy Terrors, Thinking About Religion After September 11th, 2003. David S. Domke, Associate Professor of Communication at the University of Washington and author of God Willing, Political Fundamentalism in the White House, 2004. And Bruce B. Lawrence, Professor of Religious History at Duke University and author years earlier of Defenders of God, The Fundamentalist Revolt Against the Modern Age. They found much to worry about. In Fundamentalisms Observed, Marty and Appleby had explained the family resemblances between the different strong religions around the world. To begin with, fundamentalisms arise in times of crisis, real or perceived. The sense of change may be keyed to oppressive and threatening social, economic, or political conditions, but the ensuing crisis is perceived as a crisis of identity by those who fear extinction as a people. In the early 90s, the two had hypothesized that a public perception of moral unraveling in the United States was spreading such fear. But the events of September, alas, fit their definition far better. Bruce Lawrence emphasized five symptoms of fundamentalism. Among them were a predilection to impose God's will, the one true faith, on other peoples, an intolerance of dissent, and a central reliance on inerrant scripture for ideology and authority. These two seemed characteristic of the post-September 11th White House. Charles Kimball identified five principal perverse fundamentalist tendencies. 1. Claiming absolute truth. When people presume to know God, abuse sacred texts, and propagate their particular versions. 2. Seizing upon an ideal time, as in claims for imminent cataclysms or fast-approaching end times. 3. Fostering blind obedience. 4. Using ends to justify means, as in deaths or acceptance of collateral damage. And 5. Pursuing holy war, as in the Crusades, and, to some extent, the 1991 Gulf War. Inauspicious describes their applicability. Marty, Appleby, and Lawrence, writing years before September 11, 2001, had unknowingly anticipated traits of the Bush administration that were magnified in its responses to that traumatic event. In 2004, Kimball told a Baltimore interfaith meeting that he had become concerned about the indicators of a claim to absolute truth and George W. Bush's apparent belief in having a mission. Taking a second approach, Professors Lincoln and Domke analyzed the 2001 to 2005 speeches of top administration officials, for the most part those of George W. Bush himself, from the standpoint of what was said and with what apparent religious and political goals. In 2002, Lincoln had dissected Bush's October 2001 speech to the nation about his planned military response to the events of September 11th. He found the president's rhetoric to be not unlike Osama bin Laden's own statements in that both men constructed a Manichaean struggle, where sons of light confront sons of darkness, and all must enlist on one side or the other, without possibility of neutrality, hesitation, or middle ground. While the American chief executive's words were less overtly religious than bin Laden's, Lincoln described a double coding through which Bush signaled attentive Bible readers that he shared their private scriptural invocations. Using phrases from the Revelation of St. John, 6:15-17, about the wrath of the Lamb, and Isaiah, about evildoers hiding in caves and the lonely paths of the godless.